The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Today, the House State Affairs Committee took unprecedented action. I brought forward a bill that was pro-life. It would have protected babies in the womb the instant a heartbeat could be detected, and it would have prevented an abortion after that point. I talked about introducing this bill in my State of the State address. In fact, legislators jumped to their feet and gave it a standing ovation when I said I was bringing this bill forward for debate during session. But today, when that bill came forward in the House State Affairs Committee, they refused to give it a hearing. This is unprecedented in the very worst way. For decades, governors have brought forward pieces of legislation that committees have introduced and given hearings to. Today was the first time that the legislature refused to give a hearing to a bill.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That to me is absolutely stunning. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. So good to be with you today. State-level efforts to end what is a barbaric, a horrific, and absolutely, and I'll call it as it is, evil practice. Well, they continue in a lot of places. Big dust-up happening in South Dakota. I could not believe this. South Dakota's governor, you just heard, that was Kristi Noem. She drafted a bill that would ban abortions, right? I was excited about this, wanted to applaud her for it. They would ban abortions after a fetal heartbeat can be detected. And of course, this bill's modeled after what we've already seen play out very successfully in Texas with the Texas law. So it would be enforced through civil lawsuits rather than by the state. But when she submitted it to the legislature, and they have a Republican majority there, right? The Republican majority decided not to act at all. So the House Speaker said, it would interfere with the potential legal action on another state law that Planned Parenthood stopped, you know, through the courts a decade ago. And, you know, that law requires women to go to a crisis pregnancy center before getting an abortion. And there are also claims that it could interfere with the Texas court case. So we're not going to support it. I'll watch it for you. I'm going to continue to monitor and track this. This is just it's a glimpse into the future of the battle for life in this country. I really believe, personally, if I was a betting man, I'd wager, you know, a lot on it. I think Roe's going to fall. I'd wager the house on it, you know, because I know inevitably evil always falls and collapses, right? It will not stand. Good always conquers evil. But if we're looking in the short term with the Supreme Court, I think Roe's going to fall. But we're going to see exactly what's happening here on the state level. We're going to see what Governor Hochul did in New York and what we saw down in Texas, what we're seeing in South Dakota begin to play out all across the nation. It'll no longer be a big federal issue. You're going to see lots of states going to war. A lot are already trying to take preemptive action. So let's pray. Continue to pray. Pray the rosary every night at 7 p.m. with Father Rocky. Let's pray for an end to the culture of death, for a successful outcome to the Roe v. Wade situation that is being deliberated. And let's just pray that God will be merciful to this country in the interim, because I don't think there is anything more egregious, anything that calls upon the justice of God, his wrath, his correction, than abortion. And you know it. I don't want to preach to the choir here. I mean, we all feel the same way, but I think about how little I have done. And I don't mean that in an effort to be humble. I think we should all be doing more. I think I should be praying and fasting more. And I have to talk about myself. I don't know what you personally are doing, but are you praying every day? Are you sacrificing in some small way for this horrible crime, this horrible injustice, this great evil? You know, are you sacrificing your time? Are you supporting the efforts? Are you educating? Are you contacting your elected officials? Are you doing the things that we should be doing? I know I should be doing more. I try to also raise awareness here through the power of this platform. In the end, good will conquer evil. I'm convinced of it. I just hope I'm doing enough playing my part, because I will stand before God one day, as you will. And we'll be asked to account for our gifts, our talents, our times, our time, and how we used it for God. You know, it's just some food for thought for today. In Las Vegas, there is a bishop there. His name is George Thomas. Your Excellency, can I just say bravo, thank you. I'll offer some prayer for you a little bit later. You know what he did? He asked Catholic politicians who hold positions on abortion, those positions like Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and others, he asked Catholic politicians who hold positions on abortion that are contrary to the teaching of the Catholic Church to not receive the Eucharist, to refrain from going to communion. He specifically said he would not put the onus of doing that on pastors or Eucharistic ministers. He says, but this comes in response to a column by a Democratic representative, a woman by the name of Susie Lee. And let me just quote just one short sentence from this. This is what she wrote. She claimed, the choice to become a mother is an extremely personal one, and that choice should stay between a woman, her family, and her doctor. There's no mention, of course, about the father, or even more importantly, the baby. Let's hope she, or God, really. Let's hope she heeds the bishop's advice so that she doesn't put her immortal soul into further jeopardy. One final story here, too. Big story I've been following. This was supposed to be the future. You know, your kids and your kids' kids, maybe even you, were going to be able to live in a cyber world. Facebook, of course, changed its name, right? You know, the new parent company is called Meta, M-E-T-A, right? And it's Facebook and Meta just seemed indomitable, right? They're part of what we call and what I refer to here on the air with you a lot is big tech, you know, along with Amazon and Google and some of the other, you know, monsters that are out there. Cutting them down to size looked like an impossible task. It's like David going up against Goliath. Well, what seemed impossible on Tuesday became possible yesterday. Facebook's revenues did not meet expectations. Wall Street responded. A huge sale, of their shares was underway. In fact, its stock lost 22% in value with a loss of $195 billion in market cap. $195 billion. Here's what Yahoo Finance was saying earlier today about this unbelievable plunge.
Facebook is getting shellacked. You want to go base jumping here? I hope you have a parachute if you are an investor. They missed on EPS coming in at $3.67. The estimate was for higher at $3.84. Operating margin, 37%. That was a miss. Estimate higher, 38.7%. Revenue for the first quarter, $27 to $29 billion. Guess what? The street expected $30.25 billion. So this stock, I think it's down about 60 points. So let's just say it's around $260 or so. It's way down here. So the lowest prices we have seen since March of last year. Just an absolute disaster, this earnings statement by Facebook, guys.
You know, Bloomberg was saying that that loss, that $195 billion in market cap, was a record. One of the biggest corporate history. It's still having an impact today. The NASDAQ, last time I checked before I went live here, was down about 2.6%, which is a big drop for the index, right? So we'll see if that rubs off on other companies, whether or not competitors like TikTok will start taking, I don't know, more market share from Meta's Instagram. We'll see. A lot to talk about as well. In fact, I'd love to share one other issue, which surprised me. You know, I've been talking about how we are seeing more people abandon the faith, how organized religion is losing numbers, it's hemorrhaging, and we're seeing these nuns, the N-O-N-E-S, those who have no religious affiliation. They might believe in God, but they don't think they need organized religion. On the rise, right? We talked about these numbers. I almost ad nauseum. It seems like every year or every several months, there's some study or poll or some sort of research that's done. I saw something that surprised me, and I asked Dr. Mark Rignaris, who's going to be stopping by in a minute here, to give us some perspective on this. Check this out. Maybe you have an answer for it. Here in the U.S., I keep talking about this exodus. Well, here's the deal. Because of our geographic situation, because of our news media focus almost exclusively on national news, we tend to think of the rest of the world being just like us, right? I mean, the thing about us as Americans, we only see America, right? When I say this a lot. When we travel abroad, if you have an opportunity to go overseas, whether you're in Europe or Africa or some other place, you really do get an international sense of what's happening. There's a lot of international news reported. Here in America, you watch your evening news, you might get a little blip here or there, but you don't really get that big sense. So we look at the world through American eyes, and it's obviously not the case. There's a new global survey that shows that things are a little bit different outside the American borders. The Christian Post reported that Lifeway Research has identified, and let me just share this, 7 encouraging trends of global Christianity in 2022. And this should be something we rejoice in, right? This was based on data collected by the Center for the Study of Global Christianity at Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary. Yeah, that's an influential evangelical school. So if the world followed the U.S., what would we see? You'd see a decline in religious believers, right? The graph would go down. But now here's the thing that surprised me. What they actually found is that the numbers of those who believe in a particular religion, it grew. It was on the rise. It grew at a rate of 1.3% between the year 2000 and 2022. So by contrast, the number of atheists only grew at a rate of less than, they say, 0.2%. And this organization's predicting that the number of those who believe in nothing, right? And there are a lot of people who have, I have a brother-in-law who believes really in nothing. That's going to decrease within 28 years. So here's a clip from an interview with Faith Wire and Voice of the Martyrs about the rapidly growing numbers of Christians in places, you know, where there's great persecution. For example, like Iran, you know, against all odds. A lot of Muslims have reported dreams and visions. I've spoken about that too, where we're seeing conversion in places where people don't know who Jesus Christ is. He's coming to them, oftentimes quoting scripture. Check this out.
How can we be praying for the people in Iran?
Well, we can certainly pray for the ministry that's ongoing in Iran, the ministry reaching inside the country from outside, satellite television, internet ministries, and others. We can also pray for the protection of our brothers and sisters, protection from the authorities. But there's a request that I heard from an Iranian Christian that has really stuck with me, and it's a prayer request for those Christians who have been released from prison. And you think, well, wait a minute, they're released from prison. That's great news. But the reality is they're being watched. And so what often happens, many of the Christians naturally pull back from them for security reasons. Hey, we can't be spotted with you. We can't be seen with you because we know you're being watched. And so sometimes the Christians, even after they're released from prison, they feel a sense of isolation and they feel a sense of discouragement. Just pray that God would encourage them and pray that they will be able to link back up with their church families inside Iran.
And look, that's just one country, right? Just one country. One day I'll come on and I'll share with another professor I know who's been following these amazing conversions that are taking place. But let's look at the numbers today. Let's find out really what's happening with faith. We know what's happening in America. What about globally? We tend to extrapolate what's going on in here to the rest of the world. So Dr. Mark Rigneris, who has been with us in the past, a great professor of sociology at the University of Texas at Austin, author of a number of books and article and book chapters. We've spoken to him in the past about areas of sexual behavior, family, and religion. I've invited him as a noted sociologist to give us some perspective on this today. Doctor, welcome back. Good to talk with you again.
Thanks, Drew. Always happy to be here.
Thank you. As I was saying, you know, we look at the world through the eyes of the American lens, if you will. We extrapolate what's going on here to the rest of the world, and as if though this is the gold standard for referencing everything. Why is the rest of the world now becoming more religious, and the United States is not?
Well, I think it does have something to do with the other subjects I study. I think this is a lot about fertility and something about evangelism. So when you look at the growth being fastest in the global south, I know the research that you talk about showed 3% annual growth in Africa, 1.5% annual growth in Christianity in Asia, much, much slower than in the United States. So, but if you look at like, well, where are the people and where is the population increasing versus, you know, barely increasing like here, well, it's in those places. So this doesn't surprise me. It is good news. Part of the reason that we focus on the bad news is because the bad news around Christian growth is typically here, right? And in Western Europe. So it is kind of refreshing, and it helps you to remember kind of the global stature of the church and be reminded of that. So I could, you know, as you do, I consider this good news.
Yeah, I definitely consider it good news. And I think we'll get it right here one day too. I really hope, you know, there's some things that kind of short circuit faith You know, prosperity. We see nations as they grow more affluent. They sometimes don't rely on God as much. And you're right. I mean, the sexual ethic has a lot to do with this as well. I mean, we are looking at the embracement of great immorality in this country, and we become desensitized to truth. And we live in a time of great, I think, diabolic disorientation, great confusion in our time.
Yeah.
How much is lack of faith, you know, connected to prosperity? How much is this acceptance of all sorts of new sexual mores and standards contributing to this problem in the States?
Yeah, it's kind of tough to say, but you think about the sort of the growth in the United States, at least, of sort of agnosticism, especially atheism somewhat. There's, along with that, kind of like growing at the same time, perhaps a mutual causation, kind of dissenting from Christian ethics around sexuality, especially when you think about Catholics and think about family size, you know, it's just, I mean, we were converts ourselves. And when we were Presbyterians, we had our third child, and then we became Catholic and thought, I mean, at the Presbyterian church, that was doing pretty good, right?
Right.
You get to the Catholic church and you're like, wow, we barely got started, right? So it is, there are pockets of encouragement in the United States. But elsewhere in the world, you know, the population thing is just a dominant factor. So it's that's encouraging.
My guest today is Dr. Mark Rignares. If you want to join us, our toll-free number, 888-914-9149. You know, I had the privilege of spending some time in Africa and some other places in the world, and I'm always struck by the growth that we're seeing, especially on that continent, you know, in the global South, Africa, you know, South America, parts of Asia, you know, we're seeing, I don't know, we're seeing growth. I mean, what's driving that particular growth?
Yeah, one of the nice things about Africa is, you know, the African Catholic Conference is fairly solid, and you know, they're good on the issues. They're orthodox in theology. They're good on sexuality issues. And, you know, I'm not surprised that at least the Catholic Church there in Africa is solid. But also, like, there's an optimism about the future that you don't see in lots of places. You know, like, you know, here in the United States, where we have lots of reasons to sort of look around the corner to tomorrow and think things are going to be good, perhaps better reasons than the average African and Asian do. And yet, we're sour on it. We're dour on it. We peer into the future. We see little hope. And so there's a tight connection between being a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ and also being optimistic about our ultimate future, not just, you know, tomorrow, but including that. So it is, you know, and childbearing, too, is an act of hope, right?
Yeah,
it's an act of confidence in the future of this world.
Yeah, I think the times we live in, too, also contribute. It was interesting. I was in a meeting with Relevant Radio, in a network meeting a couple days ago, and we looked at how this apostolate that we're in has grown, especially during the time of the pandemic. I have a friend who's very close to management there at EWTN, and they saw, you know, a very similar growth in this difficult time. And even the Protestant preacher and evangelist, Joel Osteen, I heard something on the radio a couple of days ago where they've grown four times since 2020. I don't know whether it's economically or it's with audience, but there's a growth. And I think when times get tough, when the world is uncertain, I think people want God more than ever. When I was producing documentaries years ago, there was a man in Ohio who had a religious book distribution company, and I had lunch with him one day. And he said to me that when times get bad, his business booms. That's what he said to me. He says, you know, people turn to a difficult times like candy and sweets, but they also turn to religion. And he used to print these books. Right. He says they were the best times for me. Because I thought, my gosh, because we were hit, when I had lunch with him, we were in an economic downturn or something. I thought, oh my gosh, this poor guy, who's going to be buying religious books when things are so bad? You know, they have other things. He says, no, that's really when things boom. What is it about that? The difficulty, hardship, and yet the, for some reason, it seems to draw people, you know, back to God.
Yeah, I mean, good times are not usually great teachers, right? They usually sort of woo us away from our reliance upon God. I know that's true in my life. I know it's true in the life of lots of people I know. That, you know, it's when the rubber hits the road, when you have difficulty, when you are forced to trust, and you do trust, you grow in relationship with the Lord. You know, it's funny that you mentioned the thing about books and buying books. I noticed in this data that you're talking about, 10.6 million books about Christianity in 2022. I mean, I don't know where they got that statistic from. I'm shocked at it, but it also explains why I'm having such trouble selling books these days. There's too much competition out there.
That's so funny.
Which I guess is good.
That's so true. Well, let me do this for you, Doctor. If people want to get plugged into some of your books, I know you've written some great ones. What's the best way to do that? Do you have a website or a book you want to recommend?
You can check them out on Amazon, or if you want to sort of see previews of them, you can also go to markregneris.com. Anyway, I'm not here to sell books.
No, I know. I thought I'd give you a big plug, but what book would you recommend? There's some great ones on sexuality and other issues, that sexual behavior, family, religion.
Right, the last two, Cheap Sex and The Future of Christian Marriage, I think are probably the best summaries. Which, you know, by the way, I mean, in terms of this sort of the competition for booksellers, it is true that sort of people read less today than they used to.
Very true.
So, like, we're having fewer children, we're reading less books, we're probably paying attention to podcasts more than we used to. Mm-hmm. But things are changing. But this data is helpful to sort of for us, especially in the United States, to kind of get a global picture and kind of a shot in the arm in terms of encouragement that the church is flourishing.
You know, it's amazing how things do change. And you speak about how we're reading less. In the very beginning of the new year, there was a study out and it showed how you know, literacy or how reading has really gone down in terms of people spending time. And I addressed the issue on the air. And then I was reflecting back just on, you know, what we saw when the internet first came out and how these entities rose, AOL and, you know, MySpace and different places, and how, you know, these entities rise. People are all into them. You had to have a website. And then, you know, if it wasn't a website, you needed a blog. Everybody's gravitated away from those things. Now you have to have a Facebook account, or you have to have a Twitter account, or an Instagram account, or you got to be on TikTok. These things are constantly evolving. You know, everyone wants to have a podcast today. I wonder if things will go full circle. If people will eventually say, hey, I want a good book, I want to read, or if there'll just be something else that will divert our attention. So even though, let's say, podcasts are hot today, something else is going to be even hotter tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, I that's just true. You know, one of the things that's encouraging in this study that you are talking about is 93 million Bibles printed per year.
Wow.
You know, some of them sure sit on desks and go unread, but it's staggering to think, in spite of all this media, that still, you know, the Word of God matters and is still considered like the desirable thing, and people want to see it, people want to read it, people want to own it. And, you know, so, yeah, MySpace, it's had its day. Twitter will have its day, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Facebook's
but,
better.
I'm pretty confident that the Bible will not disappear anytime soon.
Amen. I'm with you on that. You know, can I ask you one final thing before I let you go? I'm curious also, just back to an earlier conversation we had. You know, we see, I was talking about South Africa and the Southern Hemisphere, how we see growth there. One of the things we're seeing, especially in that part of the world too. And I don't know whether we as a Catholic Church are failing, because we have the truth. We have the fullness of the faith. We are the church that Christ established. We're all brothers and sisters in our Lord, but the primary denominations that are growing are evangelicals. They're Pentecostals or charismatics.
Yeah.
Why are they attracting more followers than the Catholic Church that has the sacramental life, that is such a channel of grace?
Well, Drew, I'm a sociologist, so I'll give a stab at that. But, you know, that's a deep well. So Pentecostalism and evangelicalism, a little bit different in some ways. And Pentecostalism obviously appeals to kind of a language of emotion that are different kinds of emotions, I think, than the Catholic Church appeals to. When we became Catholic, one of the things we were drawn to was reverence and worship.
Yeah.
And basically, and quiet at times, right? That's different in some ways than what we have been familiar with, but we appreciated that. You kind of, you know, when you walk in these different worlds, you see the kinds of things that attract people to each one of those. And so, you know, I'm not surprised at sort of the popularity of evangelicalism and Pentecostalism. Also, they're easier to sort of to launch and to access. I think down here in the Diocese of Austin, you know, we have a great bishop, but we'd love to have some more parishes. But you know, it's one parish per a lot of people, right? Which is a little bit different than sort of hanging a shingle down at the nearest strip mall and opening another church. I mean, in fact, this data talks about like how many denominations are still being started. I think the average was more than one a day, right?
Yeah,
globally.
Yeah,
so, yeah. There are seeds of invitation in each of these organizations, but for the Catholic Church, it's bound by a fair amount of rules we think are good, but it makes it sort of not quick to change or quick to be opportunistic, like evangelicals can be. At the same time, you are prone over the long run to not make as many mistakes, I think.
Well, Doctor, thank you. Always a great conversation with you. I love hanging out with you. Thank you for making time for us. And please
sure.
check out Dr. Rick Naris's books. As you heard, Cheap Sex is one I think you will certainly enjoy, along with a lot of others. MarkRignaris.com. Check them out online, Amazon, and a lot of other places where books are sold. I have to take a short pause. When I return, thousands of protesters are still in Ottawa. I'll bring you up to speed on the latest with the Canadian truck movement. You don't want to miss it.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Keep on trucking, baby. I got to keep on trucking.
A lot of trucking songs, right? That is Ernie Kendricks. Keep on trucking. Good to be with you today. I'm Drew Mariani. Thanks for being here. In about 30 minutes, we'll pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. Maybe today has been a bad day for you, right? Maybe you went to bed last night and you woke up today and things are just not working out. Lots of bad news. Maybe you're not feeling well. I mean, life can change on a dime, can it? I often think about that. I don't ever want to take my life or my blessings for granted. You know, today you have your health, today you have your home, you have maybe your family, you have your friendships, you have your job. Tomorrow things could change in a heartbeat, right? And you may be asked to suffer. You may be invited to carry a heavier cross. You know, that's how life works. So, you know, stay the course. If you are going through a difficult time today, we will pray and we'll give you that extra strength. You know, I was listening to Dr. Mark Rignaris in the previous segment, you know, and he was, I think he was insightful in terms of a lot of what he has to say. And we take for granted, we get, you know, apathetic when things are good. You know, maybe you don't pray as much, but when things are hard, all of a sudden you're praying. And look, I am just as guilty of it. Sometimes when it's smooth sailing, the depth of my prayer, my willingness to sacrifice, you know, those things that are so important to the spiritual life, they begin to stall out or maybe not be as intense. But boy, when things are hard, when you're in the middle of that storm, do you pray hard? Do you pray deep? Yeah, you're darn right you do, right? I feel like I disappoint God if I wait to the storm. You know, I don't want the storm. And Christ told his apostles, right, in the Garden of Gethsemane, you know, told him, pray so you are not put to the test, right? Pray. I think about that a lot. Lord, you know, give us the grace that we need not to be put to the test. Give us that grace to grow closer to you without having to be brought to our knees to do that. So coming up in 30 minutes, as I said, we'll pray. So if you know somebody, maybe it's your family member or colleague or friend or somebody who's in a difficult time, they can do it online. They may not be under our signal coverage in the state that they live in. Relevantradio.com, it's the mobile app. you can go either to either source, the website, relevantradio.com, or the mobile app and get plugged in. Mobile app's a great way to listen. A lot of people listen that way. And I'll tell you one other thing. Here's a little secret. If you use your computer, it used to be the computer. If it is, I think, I don't know if you can do with your mobile app through Bluetooth and stuff. Sometimes you can throw it to a speaker in your house. But I'll give you a little tidbit. If you got a laptop or a computer in your home, you say, my signal for Relevant Radio is not that great. At, you know, I don't know whether Best Buy has it, you know, the electronic stores, whichever ones they are, they sell a thing called an RF converter, right? And all it is, it's like something that goes in your car as well, right? It just plugs into the headphone jack of your computer and you start streaming Relevant Radio, and then it will throw the signal to a radio in your home. So say you're in your kitchen and the signal in the house is horrible. Well, pull it up on your computer, plug in your little RF transmitter, and then set your radio to either 88.5 or 88.7 or 88.9, is in that bandwidth there. And you'll listen to Relevant Radio over your radio, even though it's streaming from your computer. Little tidbit, because I know a lot of people say, the signal here, I hear it great in the car, but I don't hear it in the house. Easy way to solve it is just simply stream it, right? Just simply pull it up and stream it. It's a great way to go ahead and to do that. Hey, I want to, before I get into the Canadian update, I also want to fill you in one final thing here, too, and I think this is important. There's a great campaign that Relevant is engaged in right now, and I've been trying to put it on your radar because I love Our Lady. She has helped me to grow in holiness. She sped me down that path of holiness into a deeper love of her Son, into a deeper love of the Trinity. And Relevant Radio has decided to dedicate this year to Our Lady. You know, last year was a year dedicated to St. Joseph, right? Remember the year dedicated to Fatima, to Divine Mercy? This year, Relevant's going to say, look, we want to educate you. We want to inspire you. We want to help you be better informed. We want you to know why God chose Our Lady, why she's such an integral part of salvation history, and why there's a power when one turns to her. And they've decided to create a website and to create just a series of content, exclusive content for you. And you can get this through the email series. It's very simple to do. You just sign up at relevantradio.com/Mary. That's relevantradio.com/Mary. And sit back and relax, and you will get access to this particular content. And, you know, I just think about Our Lady. You know, she's the Queen of Peace. We need to turn to her today more than ever. She's come under that title. I think of her title in Venezuela, in Batania, a place that I am intimately connected to, a place where my father was liberated, miraculously healed of his addiction, a place where thousands have seen the Virgin Mary herself. She came under a really critical title. She came under the title Reconciler of Peoples and Nations. She came on the very day that John Paul II consecrated the world to the Immaculate Heart, fulfilling the Fatima apparition. Why would she come there at that point in time? Today, we live in very troubled times. We need to pray for the conversion of leaders, including our own, and we need to pray for world peace. That's something else. But I think of her under these beautiful titles. You're going to learn the many titles of Our Lady. You're going to learn some of the great mysteries, some of the great theology of her as well. So it's relevantradio.com/Mary. relevantradio.com/Mary. Let me fill you in just a little bit on what's happening up in Ottawa, and then I'll take a short break and maybe we'll continue our conversation on it. There are thousands of protesters still. I've been following this story, including, truckers who descended on Canada's capital city over the weekend, and they're demanding to meet with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to get him to back down on the mandates that he's imposed on his neighbors, you know, to the north. And one of those mandates hit the truckers particularly hard. One of the things he put forward is that any unvaccinated trucker who crossed here to the U.S., they had to quarantine at least 2 weeks once they came back to Canada, right? Now, it didn't matter if they hadn't been exposed to COVID while they were here, or if they had natural immunity. Maybe they had COVID the week before and were now fine. They just got back to work, right? Didn't matter. They still had to quarantine. And that, of course, would have an even worse impact on the trucking industry on top of the trucker shortage that the country already faces. And, you know, that was really the straw that broke the camel's back. And the truckers decided to form a convoy through the country, and they decided to make their point loud and clear to the powers to be. And you know, as I zoom out and I look at this, think of the visual, right? Think of truck after truck after truck. There was a, there was a movie. I mean, I think it was probably in the 80s or 70s. I don't even remember it. It did have Burt Reynolds. It was about a big convoy. Maybe it was called Convoy. I don't know. So I'm sure somebody out there knows it. But I actually saw a clip just recently. Maggie, do you know which one it is? I don't know if you know which one that one was. It's the clip that our producer Tom sent us the audio of over whatever that movie was. But you see all these trucks running roadblocks, you know. Convoy, thank you. She says it is Convoy. Convoy, the year was 1978. And Kris Kristofferson was the actor in that movie. So you might remember that movie. It was a great song from it that I think hit the charts for a while. And maybe I'll play that as a rejoin when we come back here. But, they have this monstrous convoy right now. And, the visuals, the people, the breakdown in transportation, the protests continue to go on. And some would consider this to be the middle of nowhere. I mean, again, you got to think of how north this is, how cold this is, how much snow there is. So at the border crossing between Sweetgrass, Montana, cool name, right, and Cowlitz, Alberta, where Interstate 15 becomes a Canadian highway, there are about 100 Canadian truckers on the Canadian side who are blocking the traffic, right? They're also protesting the mandate. So this has irritated the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, right? The local police there aren't very happy, but they're pretty powerless to do anything. Why? No, I'll tell you. They told truckers yesterday, we're going to start towing your vehicles. If you don't leave, we're going to arrest you. We're going to tow your vehicles. They just can't find anybody to tow the truck operators. You know, they can't find anybody to tow the trucks. Truck operators won't do it. We saw one report, and I marveled at, I actually chuckled at this. There was one report they called a tow truck business, check this out, 6 hours away. Now, how many miles is 6 hours to get a tow truck, right? 6 hours away. They called a tow truck company 6 hours away in British Columbia and said, look, please come. We'll pay you not one times or two times or three times. We'll pay you four times the going rate. And you know what that tow truck operator said? No thanks. Nope. Call somebody else. Unbelievable. I love the people. People are tired of the mandates. They are. And it will be very telling to see how Britain plays out now that they've abandoned their mandates, how the Netherlands, we see the what's happening even down south, right? You see what's happening in Africa with a lot of these countries who seem to have herd immunity now, natural immunity to it. So that story continues to play out. I'll tell you, I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, we can talk more. We got a lot to get into today. If you ever want to join the conversation, it's 888-914-9149. We'll also pray the chaplet coming up at the top of the hour. And if I have time, because a little bit later, I do want to talk about the Ukraine, another call to prayer. I was reflecting on a man who I met, and I'll tell you his story. His name was Joseph Terelia. He was in a Soviet gulag when the Virgin Mary appeared to him and became a great Ukrainian leader. You'll love his story.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy begins soon on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, we'll pray today, of course, the great feast of St. Blaise, and we'll pray for health. If you have a cancer of the throat or the tongue or any other issue, St. Blaise was a powerful bishop. He was a martyr of the 4th century, and it's on this day that you get your throats blessed. And as a broadcaster, I always look forward to this day. I do. And you'll know the priest. Maybe they'll do it for you on Sunday, too. They tie the two candles together with a red ribbon, form a cross, and after Mass, you're welcome to come up, and they'll bless the throat, and they'll call upon St. Blaise's intercession because of the popular piety that surrounded him. You know, there was a woman, the story goes, whose son was choking on a fish bone, and she came to the bishop and begged him to heal her son, and St. Blaise prayed, and the boy was cured. And thus began the tradition of blessing throats today. I have a brother-in-law. His first name is Blaze. And I always call him on this day. Hey, happy feast day. Because I remember one time I was, we used to vacation down on the eastern seaboard, down on the Atlantic. And I went fishing one day. We caught fish and we brought it home. It had been filleted and I had dinner. And I remember I was newly married. And I went home and I kept feeling something in my throat. And I couldn't figure out what it was. I'm like, what is in my throat? What is in my, I just don't know what's going on. And I said to my wife, I said, I think I swallowed a bone or so. And she goes, let me see. There's nothing in there. There's nothing. So she totally dismissed me, right? So like half a day goes by and still irritating me. So I get a pair of tweezers. And I hope I'm not too gross. And I went in and I reached down in there and I pulled out a big old bone. I said a prayer to St. Blaise first, though. That's the thing. I did invoke his intercession, but it's bizarre. I guess people choke on those things all the time. Because it was so sharp, it must have got wedged deep down in there. But anyway, it's kind of a gross story. I probably shouldn't have told you that, but I did. But if you have problems with your throat, my wife will say, why did you share that story? St. Blaise's intercession. I call upon the saints for everything. I do. Whether it's something like that, where I know he's the patron saint of that, if there's an eye problem, or if you're going through depression, or you know, there are certain saints. How many times have you called upon St. Anthony for those lost keys, right? Or that lost shoe, or that important document, or your license, or your passport, right? When we turn to these particular saints, St. Joseph to sell your house. There is a beautiful communion of saints. And I do believe they intercede. St. Faustina, who we'll be turning to in a moment, promised that she would intercede for us. She said when she died, she wrote this in her diary, that her mission would only begin. It would only then begin. St. Therese said the same thing. Faustina promised, she said, I will pull back the veil of heaven so that you will not wound with your distrust the most merciful heart of Jesus. You know, because God is good. He is mercy. You know, and we'll pray coming up in 10 minutes. We'll tap into that mystery. So anyway, a lot going on. And we can go ahead and talk much more about St. Blaise and other things. But I thought I'd also share with you a little bit later in today's broadcast. I think it's important for us to pray for world peace. It's one of the things the Virgin in many places has asked for, not just in 1917, but even in our own day. And I do think tensions are rising. Satan loves to divide, and he certainly loves to foment pride and division amongst nations, right? Russia is calling the U.S. deployment to Eastern Europe a destructive step, right? You know, today that the U.S. military had a raid. They killed an ISIS leader there as well. A little bit later, I want to talk about some inspiration from some Ukrainian martyrs, but I want to share with you a story of a man who I met when I was a documentary filmmaker years ago. This is probably 30 years ago when I was producing this film, Marian Apparitions. I went to Canada and I met a man who was living in exile. His name was Joseph Terelia, and he was imprisoned for 20 years in a Soviet gulag system. And when he was released, he testified before our Congress. He went before the U.S. Congress, as well as to Pope John Paul II. And Ronald Reagan was president, too. And he claimed to have received prophecies pertaining to the future of his homeland, Ukraine, as well as Russia. And so much of this is in the news today, right? Joseph Terelia, he authored a book called Witness to Apparitions of Persecutions in the USSR. He described an event that always struck me. He had an apparition of the Blessed Mother when he was in prison, one that saved his life. What the Soviets did, they put him in this cold gulag, right? And the temperatures were well below freezing. Now they wanted to end his life because even though he was like an escape artist. They'd imprison him in their prisons and he would always somehow get out. He'd find a way to escape. And the people were following Joseph Terelia. He was inspiring them in this call for freedom, for liberty, right? So eventually they put him in this cell. They lowered the temperature. They figured, we've got to stop this guy. We're going to kill him. And they put him in a free cell. It was February 11th, 1972, actually the Feast of Our Lady of Lourdes. And he was in a special Corpus II. That was the free cell, Vladimir Prison. And it's about 100 miles north of Moscow. And they saw him in this cell, and they got him wet. Temperatures were cold. They thought, okay, this guy's going to die. So temperatures began to plummet. They got cold, and Terelia began to pray. And he knew that he wouldn't survive this. hypothermia would set in, and ultimately he died, that this was his last night. And he laid down on that cold stone cell floor and closed his eyes. And as he laid down to die, he prayed. He called upon the intercession of the Blessed Mother. He called upon Jesus. He asked for God's mercy. And all of a sudden, he said to me, he says, Drew, I felt on my forehead a woman's hand. It was soft. It was tender. It was warm. And as she laid her hand on my forehead, a warmth raced through my body. And Joseph opens his eyes, and there he sees the Virgin Mary. In a flash of light, she said, You have called to me, my son. I have come. So he was instantly and immediately taken out of hypothermia and resumed. So the guards decide to walk by his cell to see how he's doing. They figured this guy has got to be unconscious by now. And Joseph removed his now frozen shirt, and he's sitting there with his legs crossed praying his rosary. And they look at him, they think this guy must be doing some sort of yoga or some sort of Eastern practice. Well, he must be doing something to control his body. So they try to turn the temperature down even further. They shut the one single light bulb that was in his cell off. And Joseph, he remained warm as though he had a parka on, right? He eventually was released from this prison, became a Ukrainian hero. He's now deceased. But he said to me, he says, Drew, Our Lady remained with me not just for a second, not just for a few minutes. She remained with me for 2 hours. It was Our Lady who heated my cell. And she drew me into prophetic visions. He says, among them were predictions for all mankind. But for the main part, the focus was, she says, on the USSR, the United, you know, it's now Russia, right? Because the Iron Curtain fell. This is before the Iron Curtain fell. But Ukraine was once part of the Soviet Union. And she said this to him. She says, now look. And she reached out with her left arm and he saw a map. And he said, I saw a map of parts of Russia that were burning. I mean, there were fires, he says, erupting all over Russia. Surrounding countries were also involved. There were flames in various parts of the world. And he says, it was what could happen if mankind does not come back to my son. That's what she said. He says, I saw entire landscapes. I saw a river I recognized, the Amur. He says, I don't know. I don't know how I knew it was that river. He says, there were many islands there. I saw tanks on the Soviet side. I saw a Soviet a city in flames. Siberia was on fire. So were the rural mountains. And he says, the vision was interesting because a further vision of 8 men staging a coup, a putsch, he says, actually occurred in August of 1991, immediately after his book came out, immediately after he was released. Boris Yeltsin, he muscled Mikhail Gorbachev out of power. And, you know, there was an old prophecy at an alleged apparition site in the Ukraine where the Virgin had appeared earlier. I love the way she comes. This happened during the 50s, that also gave a similar vision. Likewise, saw fire across the lands. Do you see the connection, too, to Our Lady of Good Help, where she prophesied a chastisement of fire? We saw what would happen here. Many of these things come true. In Kibeho, Rwanda, the kids were given a vision where the Virgin stayed with them 8 hours in 1982. This is a church-approved apparition. There they saw rivers flowing with blood, bodies with no heads. They saw fire. They saw what loomed in Rwanda's future. That was 1982. In 1994, a civil war erupts, and we know what happened when the largest genocides and exoduses in current modern history took place. So Terelia, meanwhile, back to him. Okay, he's in this cell, and he has this vision, and he sees the whole country aflame. And with all these explosions taking place, he says, you know, was it civil war? Was it solely war with a foreign power, asked Terelia? And he says, all I understood was that this was war. And here's the thing that struck me as I was reflecting on this. He says, I saw one country whom this war was waged. China. The tanks were Chinese. He says, if it does not come, it will be a warning to mankind. It will be a warning for mankind. At that apparition earlier in the 1950s, the Virgin appeared to a woman named Hanya, and she gave her this prophecy. She says, disaster is upon you, as in the times of Noah, not by flood, but by fire will destruction come. An immense flood of fire shall destroy nations for sinning before God. Since the beginning of the world, there has never been such a fall as there is today. Again, this is 1954. Look where we are today with the internet and all the other evils we have. All this transgender confusion, abortion. I mean, it's crazy where we are. The Virgin said in 1954, this is, again, Ukraine. This is the kingdom of Satan. I dwell on this hill, said the Virgin, from which I see the entire universe and many sinners. I shall distribute my graces. Tarullo's vision confirmed that, right, as he was laying in that Soviet gulag. And there are many other apparitions that re-echoed that as well. My question is, are we living in this time that has been prophesied? I pray to God not. You know, remember the apparition began in 1987 on the anniversary of the Chernobyl disaster. When he was released from the gulag, the activist rushed back to Ukraine to a very remote hamlet in a place called Harushev in South Kiev. And the Virgin was said to be appearing on a balcony of a small church to a girl named Maria Kazin. That's another apparition I could tell you about. That's another story. Let's take the Lord's word seriously to St. Faustina. Before I come as a just judge, I first come as a merciful Savior. Woe to those of you who do not recognize this time of my visitation. We'll pray the chaplet when I return.